The Punt, William Hill's Top Flight Football Podcast.
Hello, welcome along to the midweek edition of The Punt. We're going to look ahead to this week's Champions League and Europa League fixtures for the British teams. My name is Mark Walton, and joining me in the studio is Mr. Lee Phelps. How are you, Lee?
Very good, thank you. Yep, looking forward to these games after the international break. Good to see some top-level European footy back.
Yeah, good football. We've just had quite a good weekend in the Premier League as well.
Lots of goals again.
Yeah, plenty of goals, in fact. Chelsea back to winning ways. Arsenal and Man City continue to win at the top of the league. And Jurgen Klopp took over at Liverpool this weekend. So quite a big weekend of Premier League, actually.
Yeah, it was interesting, wasn't it? I'm pleased that Klopp's career started, so we can maybe just not talk about him quite as much. Started off the weekend pretty well in terms of tips, because I think Derek and I both fancied that as a draw. I'm happy to crow about bets when they win, Mark. You know, I'm more than happy to do that. I've got no shame in that respect.
No.
But I think I also must hold my hands up when you get one wrong. And this weekend, it was based on a statistical framework, of which flipped its head around a little bit. So up until this point, Man City's first half performances against lesser teams hadn't been too sparkling. Bournemouth had been doing pretty well, hadn't been conceding early goals. I went for first goal after the 31st minute at 13-10.
So you're only four goals away.
Well, four goals in the first 30 minutes. Okay. Yeah, indeed. It was entirely the opposite of the way I thought it would be. Hardly any goals in the first half, in the second half, and all of them in the first. So I must apologise for that. To tell you one of the results that I was most surprised at. I thought the United 3-0 at Everton was a pretty big surprise, although Everton did seem to have been taken aback by the sad death of Howard Kendall pre-match. It seemed to affect them quite a lot. The Newcastle result. I mean, where the hell did that come from? Not only because where did Newcastle get six goals from, but also where did Norwich go? You know, Norwich have got this ability to absolutely collapse. They lost 3-0 to one in one of their, I think it was the first away game of the season. Six goals, though. I mean, I know Newcastle have been looking better, but wow. I was very surprised to see that many. I didn't see that. I was busy yesterday afternoon, Sunday afternoon, and I thought, I wonder what the Newcastle result was. I actually put up Newcastle to lead at half time, Norwich to be drawing by full time, blah blah blah. I was like, what? 6-2.
Yeah, I thought Newcastle had quite a big chance this weekend, so I weren't too surprised that they won. But to win by 6-2, they'd scored 6 goals in their entire Premier League campaign before. Before Sunday, and then they scored
weird.
6 on Sunday.
I mean, and, you know, I watched a bit of Match of the Day too, and they were kind of basically Mark Lawrenson and Chris Sutton were basically saying we're still defensively, they were all over the place,
yeah.
Both teams,
yeah.
Just a ridiculous game. So, yeah, probably not too much to be read into that, I guess. One interesting bet that we were talking about pre weekend was the Sunderland to stay up market. There were 11-4 to stay up before the weekend. They're 9-4 to stay up now because they lost their first game under Sam Allardyce's management. So obviously quite a bit of work for him to do there.
Made worse by the fact that Newcastle won.
Exactly. And now, next game?
They play each other.
Yeah, midday on Sunday. So that's going to be an absolute belter, isn't it? Sunderland have got a great record against them recently. What a Sunday, by the way. You've got Man United, Man City as well, of course. So it's a really big weekend this weekend. Arsenal Everton on Saturday night. So some good games coming up. The only other interesting thing was to see Chelsea just, you know, get a routine 2-0 win against Aston Villa. Thought, you know, that's what they need to start doing. Just don't, you know, fly under the radar, keep picking up wins, and then, you know, claw your way back up that table. Be interesting to see if they carry on. 11 points they're on now, so still 10 behind Man City and 6 behind a top 4 spot.
They still didn't play very well, did they?
No, but that don't matter, does it?
No.
Results are all important at the minute for Mourinho and his team. Interesting. I read a really interesting article I think it was on Football Focus, actually. Charlie Adam was talking on Football Focus, and he was saying that he still keeps in touch with Begovic and the good mates. And he was asking him he was quite open, saying, I asked him what's going on at Chelsea. He said, they all love the manager, everything's fine. And they said, well, what's gone wrong then? He said, oh, they just came back from pre-season a bit late, and they're a bit behind the eight ball. So, which is a nice little betting tool. If that's true, and he gets them up to the eight ball, that's the right thing, then you're gonna find them really hitting the straps towards Christmas and maybe through the rest of the season. I'm not saying they're going to win the league. I'm just saying that, you know, once they get on that roll, once they start to click and the form starts to come back, maybe we'll see some really good performances towards the back end of the season. You never know. Things like the Champions League. You know, if the Premier League's gone for Chelsea, he's a very pragmatic kind of manager, isn't he? He'll think, right, OK, can't win the Premier League, but we could put absolutely everything into the Champions League if our form's going to improve post-Christmas.
Yeah.
And then he'll say it was all part of the plan.
Yeah. I suppose in a complete flip side to that, Arsenal are in danger of going out of the Champions League but doing very well in the league. Yeah. If they were to go out of the Champions League, how much is that going to affect their league campaign? Are they going to kick on? Because they're playing fantastically.
But they always do, haven't they?
I know, this is
We've already
this
had
thing,
an yeah. Arsenal season in microcosm, haven't we? We've already had Wenger out. I mean, now we've already had, like, oh, that's the best team that's ever played football. It's amazing, really, isn't it? And we know that in the next, you know, 4 months we'll have that again and then that again. You know, they just don't seem to have that mettle.
Hmm.
Same old thing with them that they need to go and win a title at.
They did at the weekend, though.
Yeah,
they were fairly steely against Watford.
It's Watford.
I know, but...
Because everyone was saying to me, oh, Watford, you know, tight defence, they'll do well. But they haven't played Arsenal. They haven't played an Arsenal yet. Mm. Arsenal, they'll just steamroll a Watford and they'll make them work that hard in the first half by keeping the ball off them that they'll tire eventually. And that's what happened. It's like the kind of the old, you know, the way Barcelona do it, isn't it? And you look at what happened. Always say this, when Barcelona or a team like that come up against a really dogged, hard-working defensive team, no surprises to find out when the first goals always go in, always around the hour mark, 62, 68, 74, bang, game done.
Easy as that one.
It's not as easy as that, but it's something that if you look at it in play betting, look down through Barcelona's, when Messi was in his pomp, I suppose, you know, and last season as well, that is when they broke teams down around the arm. And I'm not sure what it is about coming back from half time. So you've got that renewed bit of energy, but then somehow the concentration lapses in after that first 15 minutes of being back on it. But, you know, for some reason, around that hour to 70th minute mark, that is when Barcelona always seem to break teams down. And Arsenal did it the weekend.
Well, we're on the subject of Arsenal, let's move on to the Champions League games this week. Arsenal take on Bayern Munich on Tuesday evening. Arsenal are 16-5, the draw 13-5, Bayern Munich 19-20. Arsenal obviously turned the corner, good result against Manchester United, good result against Watford. Disappointing in the Champions League so far. And you wouldn't really want to take on Bayern Munich when you're struggling in a competition, would you?
No.
Robin's going to be missing for Bayern, potentially. We might see Franck Ribéry make his return, first time since March or so, but... do Arsenal keep this spirit going and keep the momentum rolling? And can they do anything against Bayern?
Tough, isn't it? I mean, Bayern can pretty much have their way with anyone, I think, at the moment. I mean, Arsenal have, you know, now recorded back-to-back clean sheets. I wouldn't be writing home too much about the Watford quick clean sheet because they've only scored a goal at home up until that point anyway. But the 3-0 against Man United was a very impressive performance. You know, I think it owed a lot to Man United's frailties in that first 20 minutes. They literally didn't turn up for the first 20 minutes or so, and they were 3-0 down before they kind of woke up. So, you know, I think we're taking a little on trust. Arsenal, we know, are capable of scoring goals. Are they capable of keeping goals out? And considered 3 against Olympiacos at home. That's a major worry for me. As far as the actual group table goes, and I think it's worth looking at this, you look at Group F at the moment. Bayern Munich, obviously top, 6 points from the games, haven't conceded a goal, scored 8. Arsenal, rock bottom. Now, you know, we're already at the stage where they've had 2 games. Arsenal have got to go away to Olympiacos, they play Dynamo Zagreb at home, and they've got an away match against Bayern Munich after this one. Well, if they were to lose this, that means they need to get at least... Well, if they lose this, and then you'd imagine they would lose in Germany as well. At the very least, they can get in Germany's a point, surely. They really are up against it. So we're getting to the stage really where they have to win this game, I think. You know, and I wouldn't say it's a must win because you still have got points to collect against Dynamo Zagreb and Olympiacos. So let's say they get 6 points in those games. That would only put them on level on with Bayern at the moment. You know, obviously Dynamo have got Olympiacos themselves. They've got to play each other twice so far. So if one of those teams really dominates that fixture, Arsenal could be in desperate trouble. They have to have a little bit of a go here. There's no point in sitting back and trying to play Bayern Munich in some sort of defensive fashion. And that's not really Arsenal's way anyway, is it? So I'm basically struggling to see how this is under 2.5 goals. You know, Bayern Munich's recent performances in the Champions League, home or away, whatever stage of the competition, 5-0 win over Dynamo Zagreb, 3-0 Olympiacos, 3-2 Barcelona, of course, in May, 3-0 against Barcelona in Spain, 6-1 Porto, 3-1 Porto, 7-0 Shakhtar. The last time they didn't have over 2.5 goals in the game was when they had that really weird 0-0 draw away at Shakhtar. I think it was behind closed doors, and it was just a very strange match. Before that, they won 3-0, 3-2 against Man City. They lost, of course. So there are always goals in their games. Arsenal, 3-2 against Olympiacos. Dynamo Zagreb, they lost 2-1, of course, away from home. I think, you know, it's no big surprise going for the over 2.5. It's just who wins this match. That's the thing for me. It's 47, by the way, over 2.5. So no one's shocking anyone there. Mm. You know, for a game that has got so many goals in it, apparently, the thing that interests me is the goal scorer markets.
I was going to come on to
7-4 for Alexis Sanchez, Theo Walcott, 2-1 for Olivier Giroud, 11-4 Aaron Ramsey, who, by the way, he is coming back into form. He's not quite got his shooting boots on. Did score at the weekend, but you know, he's missing a couple of chances that he really should be scoring. Lewandowski's 4-5, Muller's 21-20. I'd probably rather play on the Arsenal side of things, because I do think they can get a goal here. I do think they can breach Bayern Munich. So you know, obviously they didn't concede against Olympiacos, but I think if it's an open game, then Arsenal will get chances, and I'll have to go with Sanchez on current form. I think he's someone who can score from open play, and he can score from, you know, from a free kick and all the rest of it. So I think I'd just play that as a bet on its own anytime. Alexis Sanchez. You've obviously got the super sub on your side as well if he happens to go off and is replaced by Giroud. But I'd rather play him than Walcott, I think.
Well, he's in unbelievable form, isn't he? He's just scoring for fun. Likewise, Robert Lewandowski, yeah. Although at the weekend he didn't score, gone out of the game.
I'd rather play Muller. Yeah, I'd rather play Muller than Lewandowski, though.
Would you?
Yeah, I mean, he consistently scores for Bayern Munich, and I think, you know, at the bigger price, he scored 2 away from home against Olympiacos. He's on penalties as well, of course. If I was playing one of those, I think they're both a little short, really. But Lewandowski, you know, he's been in fantastic form. Let's not forget, so in that 5-1 win over Borussia Dortmund, that Lewandowski scored 2. Muller also got 2. Mm. You know, so, you know, he's been in good nick. I mean, he should have scored in the game against Republic of Ireland as well, shouldn't he, in the international break. If forced to play one of those, I'll play Muller. But I'll just play Sanchez at 7-4.
It was Muller who scored at the weekend as well against Werder Bremen.
Yeah.
I'll be interested to see who they end up going with on the headline offers here.
Yes.
Because, you know, if you've got Sanchez or Lewandowski mixed into them, then could be all right.
I know. I apologised earlier in the podcast about my nap. I won't go on about it again. But I did. There was no price for Sanchez to win, and Sanchez to score and Arsenal to win. It turned out it was 5-2.
Ooh.
I'd have had that. That's what I'm saying anyway.
Hindsight and after timing and all that. Should we move on?
Yes.
Dynamo Kiev are the hosts for Chelsea on Tuesday evening. Dynamo Kiev are 9-5. The draw 21-10. Chelsea are 13-8. Is this a time when Chelsea start to kick on now? They've had a win in the Champions League. They had a... No, they didn't. They got beat in the Champions League, didn't they, by Porto? Then got beat by Southampton in the league, but they did manage to beat Villa at the weekend. That's not too impressive, though, is it?
No, it's nothing. You wouldn't be saying they turned a corner just on the basis of that at all. You know, I guess we're all waiting to find out, you know, is this, when the corner's turned, do you want to be on Chelsea's side, don't you, consistently? I don't think I would be saying that, you know, that they've suddenly become this great team. But what do they do here going away to Dynamo Kiev? I think it's a really interesting fixture. Because normally what Chelsea would do is they'd go away and they'd just get a job done, you know, whatever they need to do, basically. You look at the Champions League performances from Shakhtar so far. They won away in Maccabi Tel Aviv. They drew at home 2-2 to Porto. Porto looked fantastic against Chelsea, by the way. So it was a last-minute equaliser for Dynamo Kiev to get that draw against Porto. Chelsea's Champions League form, as you say, patchy. But then I'm not sure we should be going too mad about that defeat away in Porto. I thought Porto were excellent. You know, they scored. It was 1-1 at half time, and Porto ended up just nicking it. So I think Chelsea should be looking to go away here and get something out of this Dynamo Kiev match. Again, just looking at the group stage, group table, just to kind of take stock of where we are at the minute. Chelsea on 3 points, Porto on four, Kiev on four. So this really will flip it back into Chelsea's favour if they can go away and get a result at Dynamo Kiev. It just makes them think, you know, well, you know, we're level on points, or just gone over them in points, and you know, we can start to then put our foot down, because then Chelsea, their next game is at home to Kiev, which you'd expect them to win. Then they're away at Maccabi Tel Aviv, and they don't then really have to worry too much about the home match against Porto. So I expect them to go away and do a job. I'm looking at Chelsea to win an under 2.5 goals here. I think that's got to be what his mantra should be from now on, which is, we do not concede goals anymore. That's it. End of story. 7-2 for Chelsea winning under 2.5 goals. I mean, the 13-8 to win the match.
I think that's
a big
price,
isn't it?
Yeah.
I just don't see them winning it. Look, they could win 2-1, and they could concede against Dynamo Kiev, who are, you know, a lot of these teams dominate their domestic division, and you look at their home form, and it's usually absolutely superb. You have to go back a long time to when they lose matches. In fact, the only two they've lost, I think, in the last year or so, both against Shakhtar, and one of those was at the weekend. They lost 3-0 to Shakhtar Donetsk. You do wonder what the rest of this division's like. You know, winning 2-0 against Hovela, and 3-0 against Alexandria, and 3-0 against Karpaty, which are the, you know, 2-0 against Olympic Donetsk. These are the teams who are there up against. There's no great shakes. So I'm gonna go on the idea that Chelsea go there looking for a minimum 0-0 draw, and they nick a goal with the quality that they've got, and just get a scabby under 2.5 win.
Yeah. If you go back to when Chelsea were very successful last season, it was because they didn't concede goals.
Exactly. And we're not telling Jose Mourinho anything he doesn't know here,
exactly,
are we?
Yeah,
you know, no. Surely that's all he's thinking. He's not thinking, we need to be more expansive here,
no.
Is he? He's thinking we need to shut up shop. And really, you know, if they come away with a 0-0, people go, 0-0, but it's still all in their hands. They've still got the home one to come, then they've got Maccabi Tel Aviv. So, yeah, that's what I'll go for. I mean, the win is absolutely fine, but, you know, I think that's the way, you know, so take the 13-8, you know, no problem. But, I'll just chance my arm with a winner under 2.5.
Would you just go under 2.5 on its own just to play safe? It's 4-6 if you just wanted a real safe bet.
Yeah, yeah, I could take that. Any one of those three, but I'll be a little bit greedy here.
Yeah. All right, so leaning towards Chelsea to shade it against Dynamo Kiev there. Moving on to Wednesday evening's games. We'll start with CSKA Moscow against Manchester United. CSKA Moscow 15-8, the draw 21-10. Manchester United are 8-5. This could be tricky, couldn't it, for Man United? Trip to Moscow is not always the easiest task.
No, not at all. You know, they haven't lost a home Champions League game since September of 2014, when they lost to Bayern Munich by a single goal to nil. They've had a 2-2 draw with City in that run, a 1-1 draw with Roma, drew 2-2 with Sparta Prague this year. Since then, they've beaten Sporting 3-1 and beaten PSV 3-2. Now, you know, those teams, to be fair, aren't quite at the level I would say Manchester United are at. And, you know, the good winning over Wolfsburg, the PSV defeat was disappointing for them. I'm kind of going to echo what I've said so far on this podcast for every Man United game. We've previewed every one of them through the qualifying stages, and I've said over 2.5 in every single one, haven't I? And it's come in every single one of them as well. So I see very little reason to look away from the over 2.5 here. I think they'll try and sit back and be happy to hit Moscow on the break. It's 19-20, so it's not as good a price as it was for the last game they had. CSKA, another one of those, you know, teams who, you know, at home, when you look at the home performances in the domestic division, you know they're very, very strong. There's no getting away from it. But they do concede goals, you know. You look at the last few games, beat Ural 3-2, 1-1 with Lokomotiv Moscow, 2-2 with Zenit, 2-1 with Rostov. Haven't lost a game this season at home, but have conceded. Again, they conceded last season quite a few goals towards the end of the season. So whether Man United win it or don't win it, I'd be going towards CSKA if I had to pick a winner. I'll go for the over 2.5, just plain old over 2.5. I'm going to stick with that until it loses, Mark.
Fair enough. Do you like anybody to score in particular?
Well, you look at one player, or there's a couple of players who've been really good for CSKA so far, and that's Dumbia and Musa. They've shared the goals in the two home games so far. Since that Sparta-Prague game, Dumbia got two against Sporting, and then got another two against PSV, and Musa got one in each of the games. So I like either of those two. I mean, Dumbia is the one who scores most of the goals. He's 8-5 to score at any time. I'd rather take them than Man United goal scorers, to be fair. Martial just seems to have, you know, that immediate impact he had just has waned a little bit, hasn't it? But yeah, I'll take Seydou Doumbia to score anytime, 8-5.
Right, what about Manchester United? Do you like anybody for them?
Yeah, like I say, Martial's just faded a little bit.
You've gone off him, so who steps up?
Yeah,
I mean, Memphis has been criticised by Van Gaal this week.
Yeah.
Does he have a point to prove? Wayne Rooney scored against Everton.
No one really fills me full of confidence that much in that Man United team. You know, I don't really. I mean, Rooney at 17-10, you would say, well, you know, he's a quality goal scorer.
Hmm.
But does he get the chances? Does he? If I knew that he was going to play him straight up the middle, I'd be more confident in backing him. But you don't know. You see the team sheet, and suddenly he's dropped back in a little bit. You're like, I don't want to be playing 17-10 for a midfielder who's not going to get in front of the, you know, in front of the attackers. Look, I wouldn't touch any of the United ones. I think they can get a goal, but I'm not sure where it'd come from. I mean, Mata's been, you know, everyone's been giving rave reviews about Mata. You know, whether he gets in goal scoring opportunities enough is another matter. But yeah, I mean, you know, if you're looking for a bigger price or a slightly bigger price, I like the way Herrera breaks through from midfield.
I was going to mention
it. I do like him a lot. Whether they'll get the opportunity, I wonder if they'll be sat back a little bit and having to play on the break a bit more than that. But, you know, Herrera's worth a look. 3-1's a little skinny, isn't it?
I saw a stat about him at the weekend. It was something ridiculous, like out of 6 attempts on goal, he scored 6 goals or something daft like that. And he's very clinical when he gets the chances, is the point out of it. But
it's interesting the weekend as well with Schneiderlin getting his first goal. I loved watching him play for Southampton, looking at him breaking through. He was a classic. He'd get a fair few goals. 5-1. I mean, if you're looking at a midfielder for Man United and he's going to play in that more progressive midfield role where he's breaking into the box, then 5-1 is a good price. I'm just not sure that's the style of play that they'll have to use this time. I think it'll be much more trying to hit CSKA on the break. Plain old simple, boring, over 2.5 goals for me.
I was going to go along the lines of one for Wayne Rooney as well. It's almost falling into the mug bet bracket. The fact that it's this time many years ago when he scored his first goal, that Everton goal against Arsenal. He's just gone second highest scorer in the Premier League, which he seems to be pretty happy about. He scored at Goodison for the first time in 7 years at the weekend. I just wonder if his confidence will be...
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, no, I like a mug bet.
Yeah, but they call that for a reason most of the time.
Yeah, but when it lands, it's great, though, isn't it? Yeah.
Who knew?
No, I wouldn't pay anyone off that.
All right, but you're just playing the goals, really?
Yes.
Over 2.5. All right, let's move on to the side from the other side of Manchester then. Manchester City are at home to Sevilla. Man City 4-6, the draw 14-5. Sevilla are 4-1. Emphatic recently, Man City. They beat Bournemouth 5-1. They beat Newcastle 6-1. They went to Borussia Mönchengladbach and got that Champions League monkey off the back for the season, if you like. Do they continue it against Sevilla? We're struggling, really.
Yeah, they are, aren't they? Yeah. Poor away from home as well, I think, Sevilla. You know, you look at their recent Champions League performances. They obviously lost at Juventus in this season. The last time they were in the Champions League, they didn't get a Champions League win. At Unareya, at CSKA Moscow, or Sporting Braga. I know that was a few years ago. Man City in the Champions League. They're a really tricky one, aren't they? They should be going into this and not even worrying about it. The one thing that I was really impressed with at the weekend with the omission of Sergio Aguero was the fact that how well Boney and Raheem Sterling played together. It was like they had an immediate understanding, whereas obviously the front line is based around Sergio Aguero and he plays. Everything goes into him, which is as it should be. But with those two, it was much more of a partnership. And, you know, Sterling's pace really kind of... it really complemented Boney's ability to hold the ball up. I mean, there was a couple of opportunities where Boney held the ball up so long, almost. It was like, someone get the ball off him. How's he holding it? How strong is this lad? And then he just suddenly gave it to Sterling. If only Sterling's finishing was a bit better. I mean, he did all right, didn't he? He got a hat-trick. Could have had a double hat-trick.
Yeah.
You know, and you think about that performance when Aguero was like that. I mean, Aguero, you know, what did he get, five the other week? Did he get five? I think it was five against Bournemouth, wasn't it? Against, not Bournemouth,
Newcastle.
Against Newcastle. So, you know, that's the difference, isn't it? You know, that Walcott could have helped himself to five easily. So that's going to be interesting to see how that works. And I hope that they use Sterling's pace to stretch Sevilla. I think if they use Sterling's pace to stretch Sevilla, they beat them. Simple as that. But I'll once again bang on about this. Defensive record in Europe. One clean sheet at home in Europe. Full stop.
Yep.
Against Bayern Munich way back in December of 2011.
Not a bad team to keep a clean sheet against, is it?
Ridiculous, really, isn't it? I can't remember the stats in that game, but I'm willing to guess that they had a few shots, Bayern Munich, and maybe ran their... I'm going to have a look now, since I've said it. Nine shots they had. Only had three on target, Bayern, but, you know, they had a little go, didn't they? So, you know, Man City, I'm going to go with them to win this, but I'm going to go with them to win this and both teams to score. I think Sevilla will get on the score sheet. Not so much to do with Sevilla's brilliance in front of goal, more to do with Man City's inability to keep a clean sheet, because Sevilla haven't been full of goals. You know, away from home in the Spanish division, they haven't been scoring buckets of goals. But I just think, you know, Man City will be happy to win this, and they're always likely to concede, as they did against Bournemouth, from a daft situation. So Man City win. Both teams to score, 21-10. As far as those goal scorers go, one man who I do like at the minute, a bit short for me, 23-20, is Kevin De Bruyne. Hit the post this weekend. Again, we've talked on this podcast about midfielders breaking from deep. He's classic, isn't he? You know, he's like a new Lampard for the Premier League, isn't he? I really like his style of play. He obviously knows European football well. I like him, but he's a little bit short for me at 23-20. I mean, the way Sterling's playing, you'd have to take Sterling over him in terms of a price, given the fact that I expect them to play him in a fairly advanced role, Raheem Sterling. A couple of interesting scorers there.
There's one stat here that just stands out beyond belief, and that's Sevilla's away form. Their last competitive away victory was in May, which is ages ago. They did win a couple of friendlies, but they haven't won an away game all season this year.
No, they've been poor. Haven't scored any goals, to be fair, either, have they? It's been really tight. All their away games have been under 2.5. But, you know, that's in La Liga, of course. Didn't score a goal at Juve either. The other way of playing this, by the way, would be, if you didn't like that Man City to win and both teams to score, you could just play the Man City to win and over 2.5 goals, which is 23-20. You get a 3-0. You need a 3-0 for that to land if Sevilla don't score. But I think there's still some psychological problem for City here. And I still think that they will be susceptible if Sevilla cut loose a little bit, if they're able to actually go on the attack and play on the break. I'll stick with my original. Man City to win. Both teams to score.
Everything is telling me that I should back Man City here, but
to nil.
It's just that European thing that plays in your mind, isn't it?
So hard, isn't it?
Let's move on to the Europa League. Thursday's games. We're going to look at the three British sides in action. We'll start with the early kickoff, which is Anderlecht against Tottenham Hotspur. That's at 6 o'clock. Anderlecht are 21-10. The draw 21-10 as well. Tottenham are 7-5. Draws seem to be the theme for Tottenham at the moment, Lee.
Yeah, you're right, they do. I don't know if that's because the manager's, you know, still trying to get things right, or if they've got that lack of killer instinct, and probably a little bit of both, really, because, you know, it's not like they're not conceding, is it? And I know they got a 0-0 draw against Liverpool, but, you know, you look at the other, you know, the Premier League matches, the 2-2 against Swansea. Then they had that 4-1 against Man City, which seemed to come out of nowhere. They had the 1-1 against Monaco. They're a tricky team to figure out a lot of the time. But I think these kind of games give you ability to go away and, you know, try and, you know, get your defensive shape right. Obviously, team news is absolutely everything. I know we say this every single week, but it does bear thinking about. That 1-1 in Monaco's not a bad result. Couldn't quite hang on after they got the lead through Lamella. I think Anderlecht will score against Tottenham. Both teams to score would be a play for me here. Anderlecht, you know, the home form, they've scored in all but one of the games. The one didn't score in was the opener against Genk. One player I've been having a look at from the Anderlecht side of things is an Italian striker called Stefano Okaka. Six goals he's got in 10 in the Anderlecht top division. Scored two at the weekend against Zulte Waregem. Scored one before that against Mechelen. Scored in the previous two Premier League games as well. Now, he hasn't scored in the Europa League. So that's maybe something to to bear in mind. He's obviously a striker who's in form, and I think they will get a goal at least against Tottenham. So maybe worth having a quick look at him. He's 9-5 to score any time on his own patch. Obviously, you know, the same thing stands here. If Kane plays, then I like his price to 13-10, but I doubt he'll play. You know, Lamella's 23-10. You know, again, Christian Eriksen, if he gives him a game, worth having a look at 19-10. But so difficult to know what team is definitely going to play here.
Yeah, it's always the case, isn't it, with Spurs in the Europa League. One thing I think is worthy of highlighting is Anderlecht's home record. Their last home defeat was in March, and before that, their previous home defeat was in October 2014, so they're very good at
very
home.
Strong. Yeah.
I just wonder if Spurs would be happy to go here and get a draw, just as you're kind of alluding to there. Don't think there'd be many goals, so would under 2.5 goals and the draw at 3-1 become a play?
Yeah, you could look at that, couldn't you? 0-0 or 1-1, and I think both teams will score. So I'd be looking more on the 1-1 side of it. But that's the way these things work. You know, you look at these groups, with the level of opposition that you've got here, Tottenham, Karabag, Monaco, Anderlecht, you would be expecting to win your home games. If you go away and get points, then you'll get through to the next stage. Yeah. Simple as that. That's been the Tottenham way. It was the Fulham way way back when Roy Hodgson did so well with them. And I think that's what they'll look at. I don't think they'll be too expansive away from home in this game. Interesting enough, Kane did play in that last game, didn't he? When they only got the 1-1 draw. I think Son was injured quite late on before the match.
Yeah.
Always worth looking at the team news on these matches.
All right. Bear that in mind. Similar comments would probably apply to the Liverpool game. They kick off at 8:05 against Rubin Kazan. Liverpool are 8-15. The draw 14-5. Rubin Kazan are 6-1. It's obviously interesting how Jurgen Klopp's going to approach this, because he's got a very good record in European competition at Borussia Dortmund. And obviously the big fillip in the Europa League is now that if you win it, you get a Champions League spot next season. So do you think Liverpool will start to take this very seriously now?
I think they'll take every game seriously under the new manager. I don't think it matters whether this happened to be a Europa League game, a League Cup match, an FA Cup, whatever it might have been. They will take it seriously. And I think it's an ideal match for them as well. I thought, you know, there were signs of change, weren't there, under Klopp, to be honest with you? You know, the famous high-pressing game and all that sort of stuff. And I think, you know, I think this gives them a really good opportunity to put some more of that Klopp stuff into practice. It's the first home match under him as well. So imagine what's it been like so far? Well, the Kop is going to be, you know, awash with Klopp, isn't it? I think that'll only help them. Rubin Kazan, you know, remember that a few seasons ago when they were a team that everyone was looking towards? Not anymore. Away from home, they're poor. They haven't done very well at all this season already. They got an away win at Sturm Graz in the Europa League. They've won one game away in the Premier League against Kuban Krasnodar, who are below them in the table even. But other than that, they're the only two away victories they've had. They've lost four of the last five, getting a draw at Dynamo Moscow, who are only 10th, by the way. So don't be fooled by the lofty name. Lost to Torek Grozny, lost to SKA Energia in the Cup. Energia aren't one of the better teams either. Lost to Sion 2-1 away from home. Now, I know Liverpool haven't done too well. They only drew 1-1 with Sion. But I think we can take on trust that this Liverpool team's going to have a bit more about it than that one did. The players are talking about looking at the manager and seeing in his eyes that, you know, they know what he wants. So he's obviously having some sort of, you know, effect on them already. You'd hope he would on £7 million a year. But I think Liverpool will... I think 8-15 is a little short for me, to be honest with you. I can't take that much on trust. But I expect them to do quite well here. The difficult thing here, Mark, is that I'm still a little stung from going -1 Liverpool against Sion.
Mm.
But I'm going to go again here. I'm going to go for -1 here against Rubin Kazan. I don't think they'll concede. I don't know if I'm brave enough to play Liverpool to win to nil. I was thinking about that. 6-5 Liverpool to win to nil. I think I'll stick with the -1. It means they can win 3-1.
Right. Rubin Kazan are real struggling as well, aren't they, at the moment? Like you kind of highlighted it there. They're only one place above the relegation playoff places in the Premier League over in Russia there. And the table's kind of flipped around over there. Kuban Krasnodar and Anji Makhachkala are also down that end.
Yeah, because all the money dropped out, didn't it? So, you know, they are really struggling. I mean, they did win at the weekend. They beat Ufa 3-1 at home, Rubin Kazan. But it's that away form that I struggle with. And I think, in general, you know, Russian teams travelling away from home in Europe do tend to struggle a little bit more. You know, all right, if it's in Moscow or in Russia, then you've got a little bit of weather starting to grip there as well. It's, you know, it's a cliche, but it is a tricky place to go. As Big Ron used to say, they'll be there for the shopping trip and maybe the Beatles Museum.
And on that note, let's move on to the final game that we're going to look at. Mulder against Celtic is the final game we'll look at. Mulder are 15-8, the draw 9-4, Celtic are 6-4. Celtic now back at the top of the Scottish Premiership. Long time since they've been beaten. They seem to be ticking along quite nicely at the moment.
Yeah, they do, don't they? Yeah. Still conceding goals. I mean, no, they didn't concede against Motherwell at the weekend. A 15-minute goal settled it. But, you know, they conceded against Hamilton, obviously conceding that 2-2 draw against Fenerbahce in the Europa League. When they're 2 up after 30 minutes and they go and draw 2-2. And, you know, that's 2-2-2 draws in a row now, isn't it? Against Ajax, of course, away from home. So they'll be disappointed with that. They won't be too disappointed with getting another draw here, I wouldn't have thought. I mean, you know, Mulder, you know, they had those great seasons, didn't they, when Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was taking them to the title. They're currently sitting in seventh in the Eliteserien in Norway. I think they've got about 3 weeks left of their season, I think I'm right in saying. Yeah, they have 3 weeks left of their season, so you know that there's not much they can do here. The leaders are Rosenborg on 62, so they're home and host pretty much. And you know they're 9 points away from Strom Gutset in the Europa League places, so they're not going to qualify for that again. The one thing that's interesting about Molde in their division is the goals column in their division. Rosenborg, as I said, top of the goals list and top of the table, plus 44 goal difference. The next team to them are Mulder, plus 24 goal difference. So they do score a lot of goals still. And you look at the four column in the domestic division. The top of that, they're better than Rosenborg at home, scoring goals. 33 goals they've scored and only conceded 14. So I don't think Celtic should imagine going here and thinking they're going to get an easy ride by any stretch of the imagination. So I wouldn't be surprised to see another high scorer here. We've had four goals in each of those two games so far. And if you're Mulder, you're finishing seventh in your division, but your season's continuing here with the Europa League. Why wouldn't you want to continue it and do well? You know, I think we could be in for a really entertaining game here. The over 2.5 goals, if you're looking at that, is 8-11. Wouldn't put anyone off that. I'm tempted to go here for the over 3.5 at 21-10. I like that. I think we've seen from Celtic that they are open. As I said, that, you know, the away game against Ajax, 8 minutes, 24, 42, 84. The goals against Fenerbahce, were, you know, as you mentioned earlier, they came really early, didn't they? Two goals in the first 30 minutes for Celtic. So they're coming out of the blocks and absolutely flying. If they do that against Mulder, Mulder will lap it up and they'll have a right go back, I think. So, look, if you're looking for a safety first bet, over 2.5, it's kind of nap material for me, 8-11. But I'll chance my arm at over 3.5 in this one.
All right, fancying the goals then. One man that might get the goals for Mulder that I've been looking at is the Norwegian Cammy, Ola Kamara, who's scoring plenty of goals at the moment. He takes penalties as well, or he has done recently. I just wonder if he could be a little bit of a
player. Yeah, definitely. I think they're good. Given what I've said about the goals, I think they're good prices. You know, your shortest is 13-8. Mm. Nice. You know, they score goals for fun. You know, no more argument needed, really, is there? I think if you can pick the right one there, then go for it. I think we'll be treated to a good game here.
All right. Do you have a best bet this week for the midweek stuff? Anything that you're real strong on?
I do like that last one, the over 2.5 in the Mulder game. But I also like the over 2.5 in the Man United game as well. I think that'll be another open game. I don't think they're quite capable yet, Man United, despite the 3-0 against Everton, of going away in Europe and shutting a team down. And CSKA, we know about them. They know that they have to have a go at this game. You know, they need to win this game to keep their hopes alive. So, yeah, the over 2.5 in the Celtic match is my nap, and I go for the over 2.5 in the Man United one as my next best.
Superb. Good work, Lee. Should be a good week of football. Good luck and enjoy it.
Cheers, Mark.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.